It's time now for the Prescott Palette with your host, Barry Barb. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Finding and Making the Good is a group of community members recognizing and celebrating people doing good for others in our community. Share your stories of people doing good deeds through their website, findingandmakingthegood.com, and they'll randomly select up to three each month to be recognized. Visit findingandmakingthegood.com to nominate and contribute today, and like them on Facebook to learn more about your neighbors who are making the good in Prescott. Proud to be part of the Gatto Community Gives program. Like them on Facebook and visit their website, findingandmakingthegood.com. Sponsored by Elgato Azul.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
Here's a shout out to my good friend Rukini and her crew of Allen's Flowers and More, where they've been creating beauty and delivering happiness since 1914. Located at 1095 East Gurley Street in Prescott, Allen's is your one-stop shop for all your floral and gift needs for any occasion. Weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, or to send a pick-you-up bouquet. Allen's features a wide selection of unique gifts, cards, truffles, as well as convenience of a drive-through pickup window and flower happy hour. Allen's Flowers and More, 1095 East Gurley, 445-5131, or on the web at allensflowers.com. Welcome to the Prescott Palette. I'm Barry, and today we're going behind the scenes of Prescott's culinary, visual, and performing arts, and everything in between. And my guest today is Miss Sherry Hanna. How are you?
I'm fine, Barry. Thank you.
Okay, so I've known you. How long have you actually been in Prescott?
I moved here in 1963.
63.
I am a native Arizonan.
Okay, mm-hmm. And we're originally from?
I was born in Winslow.
Okay.
And then my family moved to Flagstaff, and then from Flagstaff we came to Prescott in 1963.
Okay, mm-hmm. And so you are, what I love about I'm always interested in people who find these projects or are passionate about something and don't just start them, but continue on with them to the final touchdown, so to speak. And you've been a downwinder advocate for how long now?
Well, originally since 2014.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So my father, Ken Wayman, passed away in 1983. He was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. We did not know anything about the RECA program then because the RECA...
Okay, explain what RECA is.
RECA is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, which was passed in 1990. And what it relates to is back in the 1950s and 60s, the U.S. government did nuclear testing in the Nevada desert. And they... we were during the Cold War during that time with Russia, and it was to be part of the defense of the United States.
Okay. So now to bring them into current times, mm-hmm. The film Oppenheimer, is that the same situation we're talking about?
Yes, and Oppenheimer has been a great tool that brought more awareness than anything that I've been doing as a downwinder advocate and all the other downwinder advocates have been doing because... As you know, visual media and Hollywood, when they do these movies, it goes everywhere. So it was a great tool to help with the bill that was just passed in the Senate on March 7th.
Okay, so when you talk about a downwinder, explain what a downwinder is. The area that it was exposed to and the people that were exposed to it and what happened as far as results that came to them physically, health-wise, as a result of being a downwinder?
Okay, so like I said, back in 1950s and 60s, at the Nevada test site, they did the nuclear testing for the atomic bombs. They did it on days when the wind was blowing downwind away from the West Coast, so the wind would be going to less populated areas.
Oh,
That's right, because in Arizona and Nevada, in that area, that was very less populated. And Utah also comes into that play. So because of that, and the wind blew the fallout downwind, that's where the term downwinder comes from, the people that it fell upon.
So when you look at the area of people that may have been affected, how big of an area are we looking at?
Well, in Arizona, it covers five counties, Apache, Navajo, Gila, Yavapai, Coconino, and Mojave. Excuse me, six counties.
Six.
So those are the six counties that are covered in Arizona.
Okay.
And then there's counties partially in Nevada, partially in Utah. Now, what was unique about when they established RECA, they left out portions of Mojave County and Clark County, Nevada, those portions that were closest to the test site.
Now, why was that? Do you have any reason for it?
It was a typographical area. You know, there's a lot of reasons why. Right. I really don't know. I think being closest to the test site, it would affect people more, obviously.
You would think so?
Yes. So that's my assumption. But anyways, then what they determined was that from the data that certain cancers and other illnesses started showing up from the fallout. So there's 19 forms of cancer under the RECA law. Now, RECA was passed in 1990 as an apology to the individuals that were contaminated from the fallout. And George Bush signed the law into legislation. And so there's 19 forms of cancers and other illnesses that can be covered. The very strict qualifications you have to meet in order to be compensated, a qualified compensator.
Okay, and so what are some of those qualifications you have
to meet? You have to live in the affected areas for a minimum of 2 years. And you have to be able to prove that.
Okay, so did you have to be there during the time that the tests were taking place?
Yes,
So if you live there now, mm-hmm. you can't.
No.
Okay, this is all, I just want to make sure, clarify that.
Yeah,
so
it was 1951 to 1962.
Okay.
And you have to be able to establish residency with your school records, your parents' social security records. Charlotte Hall has the original phone books. They're in their archives. You can go and they'll certify the pages of that of your parents.
Oh, really?
Yes. So you just have to be able to prove residency. You have to send in your medical reports that show that you have been diagnosed with one of the diseases covered under RECA. And then it goes to the Department of Justice, and they have a team of people that review your application. The application is quite lengthy. You can download it online and get the application.
Okay.
And
so where do you download?
It's the Department of Justice.
Okay.
You can download that application. And like I said, you have to provide all the information. They take a look at it. No, not one person looks at it. It's a group of people at the Department of Justice. So they all have to approve your application. Once you're approved, depending on what you are, if you are a downwinder, you are compensated $50,000. If you are a uranium miner that worked there in the affected areas, you get $100,000. The millers, uranium millers, $100,000. The ore transporters, $100,000. And if you worked on site as a participant, $75,000.
So in addition to a monetary compensation, is there, I'm assuming this happens, do they take your medical expenses and things like that? And what is covered and what is not?
You just get the payout, and then you can use that to go to help for whatever you've been diagnosed for. But they also have another program. It's called the Radiation Exposure Screening and Education Program. Once you are designated a downwinder or under this program, you can go for yearly cancer screenings for free. The government pays for them. And, you know, when you go for screenings, for health screenings, unless you're looking for specific cancers in your blood, they're not usually tested for that.
Oh, really?
So what this program does is it gets you in the program as a downwinder. You go once a year and you get the physical exam. They do a urinalysis, blood work, where they test for cancer markers specifically, and a chest x-ray and a stool sample test.
Now, do you have any idea how many people may have been affected by this and how many people have actually filed for some sort of compensation? Do you know?
Yes. Since 2014, an estimated $2.5 billion has been paid out in compensation.
$2.5 billion?
Yes. So that's quite a few people.
Wow.
And so what is interesting and what we've been working on now is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Reauthorization Act, which just passed the House or the Senate on March 7th, where I was in Washington, D.C., pushing to that, because they've determined over the years through the data that more areas were affected than originally anticipated. And where, if you're familiar with the Manhattan Project and other projects where they dumped radioactive waste in certain states like Missouri, Kentucky, and Tennessee, where they actually have built schools and homes on these things
right.
now. They've seen a high rate of cancers and other diseases. Those states are going to be brought into the program. And New Mexico, which back in 1945, the Trinity test was done in New Mexico. New Mexico residents have never been included in RECA.
Really?
Yes. So what this new reauthorization act is going to do is going to raise the compensation. It's also going to include Idaho, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, Guam, and all of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah, instead of just certain areas of those states. Yes.
So one thing, thanks to the Daily Courier front page, say
yes.
congratulations on that.
Thank you.
The current program is set to end, or was set to end in June. Is that correct?
As far June as June 7th of this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what you were recently in D.C.
Yes.
And what were you doing there? What was your goal there? What were you participating in?
To lobby Congress, the senators and the congressmen, to vote for Senator Hawley's bill that was going to be passed in the Senate. We were able to meet with Senator Hawley, and he invited us into the gallery for the actual debate and vote as guests of his. And we were there to lobby senators that were on the fence that did not have a yes vote yet. So we were able to meet with them, and the bill did pass the Senate. And then we stayed to lobby Congress, mainly Chairman Granger from Texas. She is the chairwoman of the appropriations in the House, because it's all going to come down to the money, of course.
Yeah.
And so to get her support, and other congressmen from Arizona, where I was directed to go, that are on the fence about this bill. And I was able to meet with Congressman Crane, who has supported the downwinders. And so I was able to meet with him, and hopefully he will sign on to either co-sponsor the bill, or he will support it. And Congressman Gosar has already signed on to support the bill.
Okay, so now being an Arizona girl,
mm-hmm.
okay, now your past husband, John Hammond.
Yes,
John was, he was a city councilman for quite some time, was he not?
Well, he was a Prescott police officer and a Prescott city councilman and a downwinder.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he contracted non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is one of the cancers under the program. And he battled that for 2 years. Unfortunately, he succumbed to the disease. So that forced me, having my dad been a downwinder and dying of esophageal cancer, he was a downwinder, and my husband, I myself am a downwinder, and just motivated me to start educating people about the screening program and how to file for compensation, because like I said, the application is very lengthy, very complicated. You have to gather a lot of information to submit with that. And I've been able to, you know, travel the Southwest and meet with different groups here locally, statewide and locally, to educate people and help people get their compensation.
So now, prior to your involvement in this campaign, mm-hmm. did you have any history or knowledge of community service work as far as being in a political sphere, so to speak, or was this just something completely new to you?
It was not really new, because my parents were very active in the community. They were small business owners here, and my dad was also the Stringer reporter for the Arizona Republic for Northern Arizona. So he covered all of the news for Northern Arizona to be placed in the Arizona Republic. So he was both my parents were very active community-wise and involved. There's five children, and very involved with us and our schooling and that type of thing. So,
right.
And my parents were very involved in politics. So growing up, we were exposed to all of that.
So when you started, did you have any idea that you'd be going, how many years have you been actually involved with us now?
Since 2014.
So did you think you'd go this long and you'd be involved this, and you'd have the opportunity to meet with and, talk with people that are the decision makers, not just locally, mm-hmm. statewide, but on a national level, i.e. going to D.C. to sit in these hearings? Did you ever envision that, or what did you think was going to happen?
No, I didn't. And, I was mainly brought on board to make sure that that part of Mojave County and Clark County were included in the original RECA. And that's where my work started with Congressman Gosar. And myself being, downwinder, and John and my dad having passed away, Congressman Gosar featured me on a hearing, Let Me Tell My Story, NPR broadcast my story along with other people. And so that's originally how that got started. And it just kind of escalated from there. Myself, I traveled the Southwest on my own dime, so to speak, in time.
Right.
And talked with groups and did that sort of thing. And then finally, I kind of went as far as I could go on my own. And the union.
So this is just you. This is not an organization.
No,
this is
it's just
you
me.
Being an advocate.
That's right.
Telling your story
mm-hmm.
to individuals in the community that have the ability to affect change and whatnot.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. And then the Union of Concerned Scientists picked up my name somehow from listening to the radio somehow, and they contacted me and invited me to join them. They were taking up the banner for these other states that were originally left off.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that's quite a big group, and it has it's a nonprofit, but it has a lot of connections, and they invited me to join them. So since I felt I could go as far as I could locally and doing everything on my own, I decided to join their group, and they are the ones that have a lot of the connections in Washington and plan out. This is the second time I've been to Washington to testify before Congress and tell my story and work towards that, supporting of RECA. And they line everything up for you. They get all your appointments with the senators and congressmen. They provide your housing, transportation. We meet at our hotel where they rent a big meeting room, and they go over our schedules. They have everything lined up. It's very coordinated. They're very well organized. So that was a big advantage for me to join that group and be a part of them.
So I know you're heavily involved in with RWAP
mm-hmm.
locally. When you go to the national capital and you sit down, how intimidating is it, or is it not intimidating to sit there and tell your story in that to that audience?
It is very intimidating.
I would think it would be like, so what do you think about when you go in there?
You walk in and you really have to realize this is where our country, this is where everything happens. These are where the laws are made. You're talking with the people that are determining a lot of the things that you take part in your life right here in Congress. And it's a very busy place. I mean, if you've ever been there, the Congress and the Senate, two separate buildings, and a lot of people are there. There's a lot of groups there, other individuals. And so it is very intimidating when you go into hearing rooms where there's like the Judicial Committee, and there's a lot of senators or congressmen.
So when you go
there.
Into a room like the Judicial Committee meeting, mm-hmm. how many people were in that room?
Well, depending on how many people in the committee.
Okay.
And then there's a bunch, you've seen it on TV where people sit at a microphone and they tell their story,
right.
And that's exactly what it is,
Really?
Yeah, so you're able to do that. If you are fortunate enough to get individual private meetings with the congressmen and senators, you go into their office and you meet their staff, and then you're able to sit down, hopefully, with the actual individual or their staff. Sometimes they're not available, but the staff does a lot of their work, and they will... they're very attentive. You give them all your documentation. They give you a lot of time to state your case. And then, they pass that on to the congressman or senator.
So one of the questions I guess I have is, how receptive do you feel the majority of the senators and people you're talking with are to listening to you? Do you really feel like you're getting their time, or, because obviously you made a big change,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? You feel the response is generally well received, or do you feel the first time you go in, it's like, oh, it's that girl from Arizona, the Dowling,
yeah, here she comes again.
Yeah.
No, I think when you interact with them and the fact that they ask questions and they want to know more about it, that tells you that they're interested. And
okay.
I've never had gone in a time where they've just pretty much said, okay, great, thank you for
thank
coming.
You very much.
No, I've never had that. They've spent, 20, 30 minutes talking, looking. I take my brochures, I take a lot of my information with me, and I go over it with them specifically, and they ask me questions. So then I know they're engaged.
Right. So I know you mentioned earlier, you've written articles now. You've written a few articles. One you said recently for the Arizona Republic.
Yes. That was
so how did that come about?
Well, one of the editors that was on that staff contacted me and asked me about the downwinders, if I would be interested in doing being a guest columnist. So I said, yes, I would love to do that. So they sent me some, guidelines, and I worked. I did work along with the Union of Concerned Scientists, one of the gals there, to help me write it. So I make sure I was everything was factual and, you know, got some things corrected. And so, and then I submitted it, and they were very, and since my dad had also worked for the Arizona Republic many years ago, that kind of was an interest point for them too, you know.
So if I was an individual who was living in these areas between 51 and 62, like you mentioned earlier, what is it? I know you go to the DOJ website, correct?
Yes.
How long is the process, you think, from like start application to some sort of finality in the process?
Well, once you submit your application, and you need to send it return receipt requested, because you'll get the green card back that says that they got your application, so you know that. They usually say it's 6 to 10 weeks, but normally it's about 5 to 6 weeks. You receive a letter back saying that they received your application, and they would be reviewing it, and they would let you know if you met the qualifications or not. Now, sometimes people receive the letter and they say, we received what you have, but we need more information. And then right. they'll list what they need. So then that's up to you to, you know, go out and find that information and resubmit it. Now, if you, everything that you sent and the application was filled out correctly, everything was done properly, and they approved your application with the documentation, then they send you a letter saying it was approved, and then you would be receiving a check within 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So one, be prepared to do your due diligence. Make sure you have all your facts correct.
That's right.
Be patient.
Mm-hmm. Anything with the government does not move fast.
Doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah.
So if you were a parent living in 50, whatever, that period of time, and is there something for offspring or children?
Yes.
Or is it, how does that work?
The children can apply. And actually it goes down to the grandchildren. But have to be able to prove, like when my dad, when we found out, my sister, Annie, I don't know if you know my sister Annie, but she was during 1990, she was the Yavapai County Recorder.
Okay.
And she, this program came over her website, and she read about it, and she called me and she said, Sherry, I think Dad qualifies for this. So we did investigation, and we found out, yes, he did. So we got all the documentation, and that moved kind of slowly back then because we didn't have all the computer stuff. We actually had to go to Social Security and do all this stuff.
Yeah, you had to physically go do stuff, not just look it up online.
And then we had to wait to get the information. So anyways, we did file on my dad, and it's just the process. You have to be willing to be devoted to do all that and everything.
Right.
So I think it's just important that people look on the website, see if they meet the qualifications. If, like my dad, since he had passed away, and my mom had also passed away too, normally it would go to the spouse. But since my mother had passed away before that, then the children can file. So we filed as the children, and then the $50,000 was split between the five children.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we qualified.
So what else are you involved in, by the way?
Well, you know, I am the immediate past president of the Republican Women of Prescott.
Okay.
My term ended in December last year.
And is this not the largest Republican women
club in the nation?
In the nation.
Right here in Prescott, Arizona.
Oh, my
yes.
goodness.
Yeah, we had 1,058 members in our club.
1,058?
Yes, yes.
That's a lot.
A lot of women.
Considering the population, that's a lot.
It's a lot. It's great. They're great women, very active. I had a great board around me. We accomplished a lot of things. And so, but my term ended last December. And so I was continuing to do my downwinder thing. I'm also involved in the Yavapai County Farm Bureau. I'm the women's leadership chair there. I'm active in the Yavapai Cowbells and the Yavapai Cattle Growers.
Now tell what the Yavapai Cowbells, because I love this, because I know what the group is, but I don't think people are aware that the people that do this.
Yes, and they were the arm of the Yavapai Cattle Growers. They were the women part, and they did a service organization and provided, we do a lot, we provide food, beef, mainly beef, because we are associated with the cattle growers,
right.
Yes. And we provide food to, at certain holidays, to like the Pioneer Home. We reach out to certain groups that are needy and provide meat, and we've helped in the mayor's school system provide items to put beef sticks and stuff in their lunch packs for kids that receive, you know, lunches regularly every day for free. And we promote beef. That's promote the cattle industry.
I love it.
Yeah. And that was, you know, Arizona, you know, the five C's of Arizona, you know. And
cattle, copper.
cattle, copper, citrus,
cotton,
and climate.
Climate, there you go.
Yeah,
I
and so growing up in Arizona, in the Arizona schools, you learned the five C's first off.
So how long, so if this passes and if this passes the House, which I don't see why, do you have any reason why you think it would not?
You know, I hopefully not. I hope they will pass it as is. Now, if they change anything, then it has to go back to the Senate. And we don't have time for that.
Right.
They need to pass.
Because you've got months till this ends.
Pardon?
You have months until the current program ends.
Just a few months, yes. And so they need to pass it as is so that it can be continue on. We don't need it to. That would be disastrous if for some reason it didn't make the June 7th deadline to sunset.
So so once you've done this little, not little, but this political aspect of your life, mm-hmm. do you have any, you've dabbled in running for a camp
election. I did for, I ran for Yavapai County Board of Supervisors, District 1. I was unsuccessful, but
Are you considering doing it again?
No, I've been asked to run for certain things, but you know, I don't know, the political world.
When you look at it, why would you, right?
You know, there's a lot going on there, you know, and I feel I can do more on my own. And, you know, you just have to have, you know, Billy Orr.
We Correct. Love, we love Billy Orr. Yes, loved
she
her.
She told me when we did the 443, when we first sat down to do that, she said, this is going to be difficult. But Sherry, you have to have not only the political will, but you have to have the will. If you know it's right, then you have the will to do it. You go forward. And ever since I heard that, that has helped me in my life with the downwinders, anything I've done. If you feel that you're doing the right thing, then you have to have the will to do it. Then you just march forward. And as long as you're not, and my dad always told me, you know, if you can do anything you want in your life, as long as you're not breaking the law or harming anybody,
right?
You know, then you, or harming yourself, then you move forward. If you feel strongly about something, and because that's how active my parents were in the community, you know, they were very active. So as long as you're, you know, you feel that that's something that you really feel strongly about, like we did on the 443,
right?
It was a hard-fought battle, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
We felt very strongly about that, and we were successful.
And it made a huge difference. I mean, it's why we are where we are today.
That's right.
Despite everything else, it was the passage of 443.
That's right.
So, okay, I want to say one thing real quick. You are the perfect example of somebody with will and determination and passion, and a perfect example of what one individual can do, not just with the downwinders, but so many things you've been involved with in the mm-hmm. community. You, your family, everybody, you know, and, you know, sometimes we are so intimidated by the size of government mm-hmm. that we don't feel we can make a difference. And I agree with you 100% that, you know, we can make so much of a change. You don't have to be involved in government to make a change.
That's right.
And you're a perfect example of that. And so I wish you much luck with the Downwinders program. I think you've done incredible work on that and everything else you've done. I really appreciate it. And the community does also. And
thank
so
you.
Best of luck with this. I don't think it's going to be a problem, but I hope it goes through for
Me
you.
Me too. Yeah, we're just keeping on top of it. So, mm-hmm.
Well, my guest today has been Sherry Hanna. She's advocate for Downwinders. Go online to the Department of Justice website, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I can give you that website.
Yeah, give me that website real quick before I sign off. Right. Oh, here, what is it? Yeah. I don't have my glasses on here.
Okay.
What is it? justice.gov/civil/common. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to read this again after we're done. We'll tagline that.
Okay.
But we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for joining me again. And my name is Barry. This has been the Prescott Palette. Be sure to check out my column every Thursday in the Across the Street section to see who I'm talking with next. We'll see you next time on the Prescott Palette.
For more Downwinders information, visit justice.gov/civil/common/RECA or call 1-800-729-7327.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
For your next special occasion or to make any occasion special, Torme, Prescott's newest Italian bistro, is a place to meet. Open weekdays for lunch and Monday through Saturday for dinner, Torme offers a selection of creative pasta dishes, fresh seafood, sandwiches, and salads with all sauces and pasta made fresh daily. Torme, not your mom's Italian, but you'll love it even more. Torme, for any occasion, 802 Valley Street in beautiful Prescott, 778-7123.
Let Rafter 11 cater your next special event with a selection of our prepared scones, sandwiches, salads, and bruschetta boards. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe is your one-stop shop for any event. Conveniently located at Center Court in the Prescott Valley Entertainment District. Plan an event on our spacious outdoor patio, in our relaxing dining room, or order ahead for pickup. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe, Coffee Shop, and now your party place, 928-227-2050.
You've been listening to the Prescott Palette on KQNA 1130 AM every Saturday at 12 noon. If you know someone who's doing great things, have a special event, or just got a great story, drop me a line at presspalette@gmail.com. That's presspalette@gmail.com, and we'll get them on the air. In the meantime, see who I'm talking to every Thursday in the Across the Street section of the Daily Courier and on Facebook at Prescott Palette.